Today on Straight Talk Africa, the Republic of Eritrea marks 25 years of independence from Ethiopia. We'll discuss her major political and economic challenges and accomplishments during that period. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, June 1st. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we bring you a report card on Eritrea's 25 years of political independence.
And coming up later on this program, we'll share your thoughts on our topic. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. Hope you'll stay with us.
Eritrea celebrated 25 years of independence from Ethiopia last week. But analysts say the dreams and aspirations of the country have been shattered. My colleague Esther Githui Ewart has more.
A simmering conflict between Eritrean separatists during the Ethiopian Civil War escalated into a serious battle after the Ethiopian government annexed Eritrea in 1962. The war lasted 30 years, paving the way for Eritrea's independence in 1991. The new Horn of Africa nation aimed to be a country of one's own. 25 years on, little has been achieved. Eritrea has had only one president, Isaias Afewerki. Analysts say the once revered freedom fighter has turned into an iron-fist dictator. Natural disasters combined with Afewerki's repressive regime has resulted in Eritreans fleeing the country, seeking refuge elsewhere. The UN says the government has been forcing children below the age of 18 to join the national service indefinitely, backtracking on the statutory 18 months. Sheila Kitha-Ruth is the UN Special Rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Eritrea.
A large proportion of those crossing the Mediterranean and using other irregular routes to reach Europe are Eritreans. They're fleeing a country ruled not by law, but by fear. The government should discontinue the indefinite national service by limiting it to the statutory 18 months. And it should stop the forced recruitment of children below the age of 18.
Human rights groups say Eritrea is a military state. Eritrean youth are frustrated and are leaving the country in droves. An Eritrean migrant living in Israel says he had no choice.
I was being persecuted. I was in prison. Also, I was being also to send like for punishment to the army. I was in army for 3 years. It was clear slavery. I'm not working for my country or for my people.
Hundreds of Eritreans who have sought refuge in Tel Aviv gather every week at a makeshift Savior of the World Church. The priest, Tesfum Abrahale, speaking about their plight.
We are just dying. We are being extinguished. We are being eliminated. The Eritreans, they get slaughtered by the ISIS. Yes, they die in the Mediterranean Sea. They die in the Sinai Desert. Yeah, they die everywhere, actually. But the attention they are getting from the world community is very minimum.
Thousands are making the perilous journey across the Mediterranean Sea, hoping for a better life in Europe. The Eritrean government says the mass exodus is as a result of an international conspiracy against Asmara. This past weekend, about 700 migrants, most of them from Eritrea and Somalia, perished when their overcrowded boats began to sink. An Eritrean shipwreck survivor talking to the Italian press after the ordeal.
If this is how people are traveling, I pray to God we find a solution. The risk is not worth it.
A UN Commission of Inquiry on Eritrea in 2015 indicated that Eritrean government engages in systematic, widespread and gross human rights violations, including restrictions on freedoms of the press, expression and movement. Addressing the UN General Assembly in New York in 2015, Eritrea's Foreign Minister Osman Mohamed Saleh accused the UN of being unfair.
Eritrea is committed to striving for a fair, just, truly representative and effective United Nations, because it was and is now a victim of the United Nations and the powers that have dominated the organization.
He also differed sharply with human rights groups' reports saying the country is on the right path.
Today, Eritrea is making remarkable progress in building a nation based on citizenship and an inclusive state and the respect of human dignity and rights.
25 years after the protracted battle between Asmara and Addis Ababa, tensions remain. Political pundits say last week's independence celebrations were a sham. Eritrea's president, Isaias Afewerki, has vowed to remain at the helm, saying,
I will stay as long as it takes, but that's not my choice. It's not my preference. It has to be decided based on the situation on the ground.
Going by the number of people leaving the country, the situation on the ground remains shaky. Esther Gidui-Ewart, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Esther, for that report. Joining us are three distinguished guests. One of them right here, Sarim Solomon, web producer and reporter, VOA Horn of Africa service. I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to finally have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. Dr. Simon Tesfamariam, founder and director of the Red Sea Institute. He joins us via Skype from Seattle, the U.S. state of Washington.
Hello. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for joining Simon all the way from Seattle.
My pleasure.
And last but not least, Dr. Gaim Kibliab, Professor of Refugee Studies, London South Bank University. He joins us via telephone link-up from London. It's a pleasure having you on the show, Professor Gaim.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome, sir. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. This country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Salim. Your country just celebrated 25 years of political independence. Mm-hmm. Your reaction?
Well, sovereignty, gaining sovereignty, independence in terms of sovereignty, is a huge achievement. This was achieved after 30 years of fighting. Underdogs, so with a lot of odds against them, they ended up having a sovereignty and independence in that term. But the country has a lot to work on in terms of independence in its full sense, meaning freedom of speech is limited, the press is limited, and other human rights issues are still lingering. And so even though the sovereignty has been a huge achievement after 30 years, there are things that are lagging, which I hope to talk about today.
How do you respond to some who are saying that the 30 years of struggling to liberate the country from Ethiopia were probably not worth it, that in fact the people who died might in fact have died in vain?
Well, this is a very debatable subject, as you were mentioning. In fact, we were hosting in the Horn of Africa, which some of our audiences are Ethiopians, and so we were hosting a discussion among Ethiopians, and there are Ethiopians who are still disgruntled with the being landlocked and Eritrea having its own independence. The thing is, it's not up to Ethiopians. It wasn't up to Ethiopians to decide the liberation or sovereignty liberation of the country. 98% of the people voted for a referendum in terms of physical or land sovereignty. And so I would say that is something to be proud of, and that's part of the reason why you see a lot of people coming out and celebrating that. But there are also challenges that come with being a sovereign nation in terms of governance. Rightly or wrongly, Eritrea has a single party. The president, Isaias Afwerki, has never run for election since independence. And so these are fundamental things that are still lagging in the country. There's a national service in the form of military service, sometimes in civil service as well, which is indefinite. That's trapping the youth. And so people feel like there's lack of opportunities within the country. And so they choose to go look for a better life, be it neighboring countries like Ethiopia, ironically, you know, a historical enmity between the two countries, but still people are running away to Sudan, to Ethiopia, and neighboring countries. I mean, you see, you just saw a witness account, which was a survivor, who was a survivor of a recent Mediterranean wreck. It wasn't included in the clip, but I remember looking at the script and some of the things that he said, a witness account. And when you talk to witnesses who are survivors of these shipwrecks, mm-hmm. imagine going from Ethiopia to Sudan to all the way to Libya, being treated in subhuman conditions, and then they still look for a better life and try to risk their lives and their families' lives and then make it to Italy or Greece or not. And so one of the accounts, witness accounts, he said, I don't stay home because I want to be in my country, because what they find out after they get there is not what they've been anticipating. They want to be in their country, but what he says, I want to be in my country with freedom.
The grass is not greener after all.
Exactly.
I see. What about you, Simon? Your reaction of 25 years of political independence for your country, Eritrea?
I would have to say, from my position, as well as I believe the majority of all Eritreans, this is an incredibly joyous occasion. To make it this far, 25 years into independence, and to remember deep into the struggle, the Eritrean liberation struggle, all the claims that Eritrea would not be a viable state, that once it achieved independence, that it would not make it. This is something that we have to understand as part of a narrative that goes back to the 1940s, that basically Eritrea is this disunited, non-viable state. It was the claim back then. And so during the struggle, actually a de facto state was created. And during independence, or achieving independence, it became an official state de jure. And so what we have since then is this same narrative going back and saying, look, Eritrea is not going to make it. Eritrea is not going to make it. And then when Eritrea went to war in 1998 with Ethiopia, the two-year war followed by this long war of attrition that continues until this very day, everything has been attempted to essentially isolate the nation and wait for it to implode. And these are actually not my words, but the words of Vicky Huddleston in reference to Ethiopia's strategy to destroy Eritrea back in November 1st, 2005, which was revealed by WikiLeaks. So many things have been done. So many conspiracies, as you know, we use that word. That word sometimes has a negative connotation. I tend to avoid using it, but we have to understand that much has been done to Eritrea to reverse its sovereignty and to tell the world, to make it appear to the world that this is a non-viable state. And so what we see today is Eritrea standing very tall, very proud, and the fact that it's on track, actually has met the Millennium Development Goals, among the only in the African continent in terms of the health-related Millennium Development Goals, which is quite an achievement, and so many other developmental successes. It gives great joy and great pride, despite all the challenges. As Salim just mentioned, you know, very true. We have many challenges in Eritrea, but you know, it's a beautiful story. Every beautiful story has conflicts, challenges, all these different things, and Eritrea is a great story. The story of Eritrea is amazing. And so 25 years into independence, I believe that Eritrea is headed in the right direction on an upward trajectory, despite all that has happened and gone on. And so I think this is just a very joyous occasion for many Eritreans around the world.
Well, congratulations, of course, on that. But Simon, I have run into a lot of Eritreans, including former senior government officials across the African continent and indeed around here in the United States, who frankly say, yes, they supported, of course, the sovereignty of Eritrea, but when they look back, they sincerely feel that the struggle was not worth it at the end of the day, because, in fact, they say that some of those people who died while liberating Eritrea may in fact have died in vain. How do you react to that?
You know, when I hear these things, one thing that really comes to mind, first and foremost, is in Eritrean, in the Eritrean mindset, among the Eritrean people, there is the remembrance of martyrs. There were 65,000 Eritrean martyrs who died during the independence struggle, and virtually every family was affected by this, lost a child, a brother, a sister, a mother. And the thing is that they died for a vision of Eritrea. You know, like I said, Eritrea was said not to be a viable state, despite the fact that it was the second most industrialized nation in Africa, after South Africa, prior to Ethiopian colonization. And so they reversed this this narrative, turned it into a negative one, and said that Eritrea would not be able to make it after independence. And so throughout the 30-year struggle, you heard, just like you hear today, oh, Eritrea is not going to make it. Eritrea, it's not worth it to fight this independence struggle. Look, you're 29 years into independence or into this struggle. You're not going to do it. This is in 1990, you know? This is at the cusp of liberating the country. You still had the naysayers. In 1988, you know, in March, the Battle of Afabet was a tremendous victory for the Eritrean people. But just before that, there were so many naysayers. And so I feel, again, that this is a very similar situation where you have Eritrea is almost there. It is getting there. The media paints a different picture. And so people get confused and they turn away from Eritrea. And
I see.
Perspective on Eritrea. So that's what we have today, is that we have people that are twisting the narrative to make it appear as though it wasn't worth it. But this goes back throughout our history. So it's just the same, more of the same.
Thank you. Now we'll pause for a short break. Would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. And we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Eritrea Anniversary. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Professor Gaim. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, you listened, of course, to your compatriots. Your reaction, would you say that Eritreans are better off today than they were perhaps 25 years ago?
It depends on how you measure it. But in an occasion like this, the question that springs to mind is, what would the 60,000 Eritreans that were martyred to achieve national independence say if they were to witness what has been unfolding in the country during the last 25 years? And the simple answer to that would be, if they were to see what is going on in the country and compare it to the expectations they had and the reasons why they laid down their lives they would simply turn in their graves. They wouldn't believe what is going on, what is happening in their name. Eritreans, we are stuck in the past. We're endlessly celebrating the glorious past. But what have we got to show for the last 25 years? If we look at the fundamental things that have been affecting our society, the government's myopic economic policy based on hostility, the private ownership and the private enterprise has brought our country to its knees. The economy is dominated by the incompetently managed firms of the ruling party and the public sector. There is no private sector in the country. In a country that is just recovering from 30 years' devastating war, the construction industry plays a key role. But the private sector is banned from the construction industry since 2006. And the only enterprises that are active in the construction industry are firms belonging to the party. The open-ended national service has literally degenerated into forced labor or modern form of slavery. And tens of thousands of Eritreans have been voting with their feet. Recently, the Wall Street Journal described Eritrea as the fastest emptying country in the world. And that is quite sad to see one's country being described as the fastest emptying one. It is hollowed out of its most important resource, human labor. So, simply stated, the promises of the struggle that our people fought for heroically have been betrayed. And the government does not seem to realize the damages it is causing to its people. And it is the very cause it fought for. And I'm not sure what the solution to that is, unless the government wakes up and realizes and relinquishes power and hands it over to the people and realizes or admits that it has tried but failed miserably. I don't think there will be any way out from the quagmire our country has sunk in.
What about the fact that Simon says that Eritrea, in fact, happens to be one of those few countries in Africa that have, in fact, met the Millennium Challenge goals? Doesn't that translate in improved quality of life of the people of Eritrea?
To give the devil his due, I think the government has achieved its goal in primary health care. But that should not be exaggerated. It is only in primary health care, because the large majority of Eritreans that are suffering from serious illnesses are receiving treatment in Sudan at a very, very high cost. That does not mean Eritrea doesn't have medically qualified doctors, but they don't have enough equipment and there are no supply of medicine. And most people are traveling to Sudan to receive treatment. But in primary health care, I think the achievements have been remarkable. But since Eritrea is a closed society, this have not been scrutinized by outside observers. And it remains to be seen whether the achievements could withstand critical scrutiny of independent assessors or examiners. But I think Salam told me in the beginning yesterday when she called me, we should not only focus on the negative aspects of the problems, but we should also look at the positive achievements. Primary health care is one. Education started very well, but the national service has actually had a very negative impact on educational achievements, because most parents, especially in the western and the eastern lowlands, have withdrawn their daughters from education, from primary and secondary education, to avoid their participation in national service for fear of perceived or actual sexual violence. And that has detrimentally affected the participation of women, especially among Muslims, but generally among the whole population.
Very interesting. Salim, of course, you told me that you participated in national service.
Yeah, I mean, education, as Professor Gaim listed, it's a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mixed bag because the country boasts, extremely high adult literacy rate, which is superior in the continent. They have, the continent, developing countries, other developing countries as well. They have universal and free education. I was one of the beneficiaries of education because I participated in national service as well.
And you went up to university in Eritrea?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
My earlier undergrad, I did my journalism degree in Asmara University.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Asmara University, the situation in terms of higher institutions, Asmara University used to be highly accredited, internationally recognized institution at this point, because there was only one institution that the country was competing. People, 13,000. I was competing against 13,000 people who were taking the test to get into one institution.
Mm-hmm.
And so the quota would be 1,000 or 2,000 people to come in. And so the government dispersed and dismantled the institution to disperse it all over the country. So there are different colleges all across the country now. And it's no longer accredited as it used to be before. It used to be the jewel of the country, where was competitive internationally, and no more. And so many young people leaving the country also look for educational opportunities somewhere else because of that. And they desire to grow and have more educational opportunities and aspire, and other countries also emanate from that institutional,
What about these allegations of indefinite national service? Is that true? And if true, how were you able to go to college from national service and to end up in the United States, Salim?
Well, so the national service applies to every man and woman in the country. And so between the age of 18 and 50.
And it's supposed to be for how long? Isn't it 18 months at least?
On paper.
On paper. But in practice?
It's tricky. In practice, I know colleagues and friends that have been in national service for over 10 years.
What?
Yes. I mean, and the thing is, even when you have opportunity, I was one of the lucky ones because I made it through the quota to join the university after competing with 13,000 people. I went to do my education at the University of Asmara, and then national service continues. So even if you are practicing, let's say you study journalism and you practice as a journalist at the only media mm-hmm. out there is the government institution, the state-run TV station or radio or print, you stay there as a civil service, is what it's called, for a year, paid almost very minimal, and that limits people's opportunities.
How did you end up here? Did you leave legitimately?
Oh, yeah, openly? I left legitimately. So the thing is, there is leniency. Part of the reason why this law that's been written on paper is practical to some extent is that, there is leniency. If you've done, let's say, 6 months of your military service and you do 1 year of your civil service, sometimes there's leniency when it comes to women sometimes. But that doesn't apply. You're looking at an exceptional case. There are friends and colleagues that have been trapped for 10 years. And so I consider myself as one of the lucky ones in terms of, achieving my goals and being at a position where I am, seeking, of course, even educational opportunities in the U.S. I'm sure Simon could also chime in because he took education in the U.S. as well. But aside from personal achievements or processes, in terms of the country as a whole, people feel, find themselves, especially the youth, find themselves within the service doing, whether it's under a ministry or military service, for 10 plus years.
You are the exception rather than the rule. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariam Ujaro. Take it away, Mariam.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a Straight Talk Africa Facebook fan who responded to our question of the week.
Yahya Ahmed Gumel from Nigeria writes, "The struggle for independence by nationalists in Africa has led to the end of colonialism and white man domination. Eritrea achieved its independence under the vortex of radicalization, which consumed scores of lives. However, no amount of sacrifice is enough for the sake of freedom and self-rule. Unfortunately for the Eritreans, 25 years after independence, things appear to be more despairing. Eritrea has the worst human rights abuses, absolutely no freedom of expression, political opposition is never tolerated, and with these heartbreaking realities, independence did not achieve much for many Eritreans. Therefore, the concept of independence is merely useless if not accompanied with freedom and tolerance under the guide of core values."
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward, to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is Straight Talk Africa on The Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidiyuwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. As we've been discussing, following 30 years of war for independence by the Eritrean Liberation Front on May 24, 1991, Eritrea did regain her political independence from Ethiopia. As the East African nation celebrates her 25th anniversary, Eritreans around the world are reflecting on the aspirations and dreams of those who fought for independence. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what happened to the Eritrean citizens' vision of utopia, and can it still be reached? But before we begin, I'd like to thank everyone for using all our social media platforms to communicate to us. And another reminder that we are indeed tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Eritrea Anniversary. And if you haven't yet, do follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Yafet Z, who tweets that despite all the efforts to undermine the country, Eritrea is still on track. The nation has said no to NGOs and has managed to feed itself. Well, now to a comment from a Facebook fan. His name is Obibini, from Ghana, who writes, "I am against the so-called independence celebration in Africa because we are free from birth, and it's a waste of time and money. To me, Eritrea's own is rational, but under Afwerki, the allegations of corruption, abuse of power, and humanity seems neglected by the African Union. National coexistence is very high, but development is very down in Ethiopia. God bless Africa, he writes. Well, very interesting comments, Shaka, and guess your take on this.
Very interesting indeed. Simon, could you please react to that?
Well, there were a number of things that were said there. I do think that celebrating independence is an important thing. Humans are ritualistic creatures, social creatures, and I think that it's important to celebrate things that are important to us. We go to a friend's funeral if they pass away as a show of respect. Similarly, we have Martyrs' Day, we have Independence Day, different things to show respect for things that we care about. And so I think it's important to do that and to show that. It shouldn't be the only thing that you do, however. But I also should say, going back to some of the comments that were said over Twitter, as well as from my compatriots here, I want to sort of touch on this issue of education, national service, development, because they're all interrelated. It's very important to understand that when it comes to national service, we have to distinguish national service from people being called back to duty in the reserve forces of Eritrea. So when they complete their 18 months, what then happens is that they are often called back to duty because of the extended, protracted war of attrition. When I say war of attrition, I mean a war until the death, literally, between the ruling governments of in both countries. The idea is to, it's a war until the death. And so what happens is that you have mobilization of a country of 3.5 million people to 4 million. The numbers are still being debated, but a very small population against an Ethiopian population that's almost 100 million people. So if you can imagine if a country, which to this very day, Ethiopia is very bellicose and continues to attack Ethiopia or Eritrea along the border, you can imagine this country of 3.5 million people, what they'll have to do, the sacrifices that will be had to be made in order to defend and protect the nation. And so when people go into their careers, they have these aspirations and all these things, it's so unfortunate how many dreams and how many aspirations are sometimes put on hold because of this ongoing struggle.
It's
an ongoing struggle. And so just the one point I want to make is that this is a violation of international law. There are no ifs, ands, or buts here. It's very clear what needs to be done. The international community just fails to play its role in ending this crisis. It was determined by international arbitration exactly what should be done with this border dispute, which is no longer a dispute, that Bademe, the casus belli of the war, was awarded to Eritrea. And Ethiopia continues to occupy this region, even though the decision that was given was final and binding by the consent of both parties prior to that arbitration. So there's no question about this. The international community and everyone should basically allow justice to happen here, and so both countries and their peoples can go about living their lives.
Let me ask you a very simple question, Simon. Have you ever participated in the Eritrean National Service?
I did go back and participate in my civil service over the past couple years while I was there. And I'm actually, after the completion of my studies, which I recently have completed, I'm going back there to continue this work. And so, yes, I have taken part in service in Eritrea.
I gather, of course, that you are a physician. And as you heard earlier, Professor Gaim says, in fact, physicians are in very, very short supply.
And he is correct in saying that they are in short supply. But you have to understand that Eritrea was incredibly in short. We were incredibly in short supply upon independence. If you look at the numbers in terms of pediatricians, number of surgeons, you could count them less than the number on your finger. On your hands, excuse me, for the number of pediatricians, the number of surgeons and obstetricians. And so the thing was is that we needed to get those numbers up. And so there was the medical school there, postgraduate program, all these different things that were put into place such that we could train professionals to serve the Eritrean people in the healthcare sector, to take care of the ill, to improve their condition, And as you've seen, as we've seen with the Millennium Development Goals, Eritrea has made tremendous progress. But again, we don't settle for this. We have a long ways to go. Everyone understands this.
Thank you. Mariama, do we have more audience reaction, please?
Yes, we do, and we'll move on to another one, this time from Mohamed Ahmed Mansour from Monrovia in Liberia, who writes that utopia is politically necessary even for those who do not desire an alternative society at all. Thoughtful politics depends upon debate, and without someone or something to disagree with, there is no meaningful dialogue, only an echo chamber. Let's take a look at another post, this time from Akwasi Marfo in Ghana, who writes, African leaders are greedy. Why are they always wanting to be in power for so many years? I am against democracy because of how some presidents have abused it. Well, Shaka, quite a different point of views this time around. Your thought, and Shaka and Guess, of course.
Very interesting indeed. Professor Gaim, your reaction, please.
I agree with those who are saying African leaders are greedy, and once they are in power, they never want to leave. There are very few who have left. You heard our president saying that, I have no intention of leaving power, and he has been in power. The thing with him is actually, unlike many other African leaders, he exercises absolute monopoly of power, and the people around him don't exercise any kind of power. It's only at his, it's him who decides everything in the country. And the state our country is in is because of that. Simon was saying there is shortage of supply of medically qualified experts, surgeons, and so on. You know, Eritrea is a small country, but in comparison to its size, it has lots of educated people. And after independence, many Eritreans who are highly qualified in different fields went back to Eritrea to participate in the process of nation building and reconstruction. But most of them did not stay long because they were rejected. The government, which took over power after fighting for many years in the field, did not want expats to join them. They wanted to monopolize everything. And those who went back enthusiastically to participate in nation building voted with their feet because they were poorly received. And the level of human rights violations were so intolerable. Whoever has a sense of respect for the sanctity of rule of law and the human life would not be able to tolerate what goes on in the country. The founding fathers of the national liberation struggle have been languishing in an unknown place since 2001. The journalists who were detained in September 2001, nobody has heard from them. Many of them are still held in incommunicado detention. These people have relatives, have children, have mothers, wives, grandmothers, and they sacrificed all their lives to fight for independence. And when independence came, it consumed them. This is not what our people fought for. And I think instead of celebrating the glorious past, we need to ask ourselves, what has gone wrong with us, with our country, and what do we need to do to rectify the disasters that have engulfed our country? And it is only after we begin to ask questions, soul-searching questions, that we will be able to talk about solutions. The people who are in power have no intention of relinquishing power. They are using different pretexts to tell us that there is no room for democracy. There is no room for change. There is no room for accommodating those who have a different opinion. Their approach has been underpinned from the outset, my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. And that's why so many Eritreans are voting with their feet. And the country is hollowed out of its content. And that is a very, very sad thing to see, a country undergoing through such kind of difficulties and suffering, which are avoidable. Eritreans are peace-loving people. If they had a chance, they would be the first people to go back home, abandon their wealth and their comfortable life here to build their country. But our leaders, one leader, of course, there are not many leaders, is not listening. And I hope there will come a time where the leadership would realize that it is sleepwalking into a disaster.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thank you, Shaka, and wanted to do a quick shout-out to my Eritrean friend, Twelde, whom I hope him and his family are tuned in and definitely watching this show. That will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Just sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Another reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa program page on our website or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss African Liberation Day. Join host Shaka Sali, his panel of guests, and me, your social media reporter, as we talk about the African Union. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back, and today we bring you a report card on Eritrea's 25 years of political independence. Our distinguished guests are Salem Solomon, web producer and reporter, VOA Horn of Africa Service, Dr. Simon Tesfamariam, founder and director of the Red Sea Institute. He joins us via Skype from Seattle, the U.S. state of Washington. And last but not least, Dr. Gaim Kibulieb, professor of refugee studies, London South Bank University. He joins us via telephone link up from London. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
It's great to be here.
You're most welcome, Salem.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. Thank you, gentlemen. Let me come to you immediately, Salem. You obviously have been following and participating, of course, in the conversation, but I believe that in the opening, you watched and viewed the package. Mm-hmm. In that package, there was an interview with a United Nations rapporteur on Eritrea.
Sheila Kita Ruth.
Yes.
I've interviewed her.
She said, a country not ruled by law, but by fear. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with her?
Well, and just to add to Professor Gaim, what he was saying about political dissent not being allowed in the country, journalists who are still in prison for 14, 15 years, in fact, if people are critical of the government, they're detained and never seen again sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's good timing now because last weekend on Saturday, I attended an event in Alexandria, Virginia, where a group of journalists, friends and family of those who are in prison and forgotten, organized a memory for more than a dozen of journalists who have been arrested in 2001. And so, you know, journalist Manuel Asrat, who's a very prominent, award-winning journalist who wrote poems and wrote songs for the country languishing in prison. You know, the country boasted over 11 or so independent newspapers prior to the war that that lasted for 3 years. And so reporters, the most known case is Dawit Isaak, a dual citizen, a Swedish citizen. People have been campaigning for him. But there are many of other journalists, like Siyum Tsahaye, the founder, the longest actually imprisoned journalist in the continent, detained and never seen again. One of the brothers of Emmanuel Asrad I spoke to when I was working on the story said that, you know, they haven't seen him since he was imprisoned. And ironically, he was a child when his brother was a child when he was arrested. And ironically, when people who were dressed as civilians to come and take him from home, he pointed them to his home because he was very popular, a journalist, very respected and well-known, working for his country, providing space for civil society. You know, these reporters were exceptional because they were producing newspapers that the country needed, you know, critical views that started conversation among Eritreans and talked about social issues, political, social issues that affected the daily lives of Eritreans. And now they're paying a price for it simply because they were printing.
What about the government's point of view that those type of journalists you are talking about, in their words, not mine, happen to be unpatriotic?
Well, the highest form of patriotism happens to be being critical over things that are not working. That is the view that has worked, historically has worked. Of course, it's great to celebrate what you've achieved, but it's also great to look in the mirror and say, what's not working? And let's address those issues. I think it's healthy to do that, and it's very important to look inward and see what's not working for within the society and address these issues head on and not shy away from them as if they're other people's or other countries' problems. Well, I think that's a very healthy way to move forward.
Well, time happens not to be our best ally. We have to go for the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone calls. Let me go to Mike from Washington. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yes. Shaka, how are you, my friend?
Terrific. Terrific. A very, very long time, Mike. How are you today?
I'm good. Listen, I don't want to waste time because we have limited amount of time, but I do want to stress something. First and foremost, I do appreciate you doing a show on Eritrea. It's very important indeed. Eritrea has proven that it is a nation that has been through so much.
Okay. Mike, where are you?
And delegitimize Eritrea and the international arena, you know, has to be put into consideration. We're not looking at the perspective. When you do this kind of shows, we really need to speak about the perspectives of how did we get to where we are. First and foremost, the border demarcation, which the UN, the US, the, you know, everyone was guarantors, have not been, you know, they haven't done their job. We need to really, really put that into perspective. Why are people in the national service? Because we do have to protect our country. If Eritreans don't protect it, who does? Who will? Okay. On the other hand, people like the professor from London, who you have on your show, in respect to him, you know, he has not been to Eritrea in such a long time. I don't know how you can actually analyze Eritrea when, in fact, he doesn't have any evidence whatsoever. And then the other one is, which I'm going to stop at this, is the whole COIE report. That is just absurd. It's been proven over and over again that everything was done based on lies. Eritrea celebrated 25 years with almost millions of people around the world. If you combine all the celebrations that went around the world, from the USA to Israel to everywhere, many people celebrate. Obviously, Eritrea is doing something wrong. And I'll stop it at that. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, Shaka.
Mike, two questions. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
First of all, when were you last in Eritrea? And the second question is, have you participated in the national service in Eritrea yourself?
I have not participate in the national service because I came here before independence. I grew up in America. I'm an Eritrean American. I came here a long time ago when the actual brutal dictatorship of the Mengistu regime was destroying my family. And, you know, thank God to the EPLF leaders and those who are still there right now that are defending this country from what's been going on. And let me tell you this, I've lost many relatives, all of us have, even in the recent war. And so, look, I have every reason to be, you know, to feel the same way as most of the people that are in Eritrea are feeling right now. Because, look, the bottom line is, we are trying to build a country. We're 25 years old. It is a process. It's a lengthy process, but it's almost, I feel like Eritrea is being attacked like South Africa, you know, was in during the apartheid years in terms of, you know, how the people are suffering. You know, we are, like, suffering, but the international community is not being fair to us.
Mike, your point, I think, is well made.
Very much, Shaka, and I appreciate it again. One more time.
You're most welcome. One more time. Let me come to you, Simon. Simon, I think it is universally accepted that the supreme law of any land is a constitution.
Sorry, say that again? I couldn't hear you.
I was saying that I think it is universally accepted that any country, its supreme law is essentially reflected in its constitution. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, it's true, yes. That well, it actually depends on the country. You know,
Wait a minute. If it is true that any country, its supreme law has to be a constitution.
In a republic, yes.
Any particular reason why, for example, the 1997 constitution of Eritrea has never been implemented? And a piece of document, obviously, which in fact recommended for multi-party politics. And now you have one group, you call it a political party. And you heard earlier the UN rapporteur for your country saying that that country is not ruled by law, but by fear. How do you react to that?
Well, I have to disagree wholeheartedly with the idea of being ruled by fear as opposed to being ruled by law. You know, there is a legal system, laws that are in place in the Gazette. We have since 1997, yes, a constitution that was ratified and has been, for the most part, implemented with the part on the presidential elections that was was delayed in light of all that was going on during this last 16 years, actually, in regards to the border war with Ethiopia. All that has been going on, I mentioned the war of attrition. And so basically, now Eritrea is in a process in which there's actually a new constitution that's going to be written. And to contextualize all of this, why this is going on, why is there a new constitution being written? It must be understood that the people that were involved integrally in writing this constitution were actually part of these...
Unfortunately, Simon, time happens not to be our best ally. Unfortunately. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Salim Solomon, web producer and reporter, VOA Horn of Africa Service.
Thank you.
Dr. Simon Tesfamaliam, founder and director of the Red Sea Institute, joined us via Skype from Seattle, the U.S. state of Washington. And last but not least, Dr. Gaim Kibliab, professor of refugee studies, London South Bank University. He joined us via a telephone link up from London. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Eritrea. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.